Chapter 7. Okay, I said. I understand. Basically what I expected. Thanks. It was the 45th venue I'd called in 2 days, and it had given me the same answer as the other 44. No, funnily enough, we can't fit in a lavish wedding of your dreams at less than a week's notice. We're kind of booked up. I directed a bad news expression at Bridge. We were back in her flat with Tom, who was taking a couple of days off to be with his fiancée and avoid getting an informant murdered, and Liz, who was working the church angle. Sorry, I told them.
No, it's fine.
Bridge had a severe case of it's not fine face.
We'll keep going. We can keep going, right?
Liz looked up from her own phone. She'd annexed a corner of the room and had an enormous leather-bound planner bulging with sticky notes and spare bits of paper open in front of her.
I think churches are a no-go. I'd have to find one you had a connection to that wasn't already hosting another wedding, then meet up with their vicar at extremely short notice and arrange a lot of complex theology things. And that also means I'm ruled out of officiating.
It was the latest item in a long run of bad news, and Bridge gave an involuntary sob.
But we promised, she said, when you first became an ordinand.
We originally promised that you were going to be my first wedding, and that didn't pan out either.
Both of them glared at Tom.
Hey.
He put his hands in the air.
Would you really want me to have proposed before we were ready, just so you could keep a promise you made in your early 20s?
Yes, cried Bridge. It would have been romantic, and it would have been perfect. And because we waited, we're cursed, and everything is falling apart.
Liz shifted uncomfortably.
I think as a vicar, I should be on the side of taking marriage seriously.
Traitor.
Bridge wasn't genuinely angry, but given how emotional the last couple of days had turned out to be, she was straying close to it. I think a civil ceremony might be out of the question as well, I added. Every registered venue I've tried has been booked for months. Staring at his laptop screen, Tom shook his head.
He's right. We're not going to find anywhere.
I think.
Liz stood up and ran her hands through her hair.
That you might have to decide whether you want a wedding or a wedding ceremony.
What's the difference? Asked Tom, glancing up.
A wedding has legal status. A wedding ceremony is just a party, and then you do the legal bit quietly afterwards.
I don't want my wedding to be just a party,
wailed Bridget.
This is supposed to be the most important day of my life.
Well, I tried, I suppose it depends on what you think makes it important. I must have done a good job with my calming voice, because Bridge seemed genuinely calmed.
What do you mean?
Ugh, that was what happened when you said nebulously reassuring things you hadn't thought through. You had to back them up, and I had a seriously limited up-backing game.
I guess if I was marrying Oliver, what I'd really want, what would really matter to me, would be making sure that it was him and me saying how much we loved each other and wanted to be together in front of all the people we cared most about. Our friends, our family, well, my family, well, my mum. I wasn't quite sure why I'd gone to myself as an example, because Oliver and I were a long way from the till death do us part conversation. But it was hard not to have weddings on the brain when everyone around you, including your dickhead ex, was getting married. Still, now that I'd put the possibility out there, it didn't seem entirely terrible. There was a certain something to it, wasn't there? The idea of your thing being a thing that you shared with everyone in a way that, like, made it an official thing. In any case, I'd pressed the right Bridge distracting button because she leaned across the sofa and hugged me.
Oh, Luke, that's beautiful. And are you?
Are I what?
Are you and Oliver getting married?
Ah. That was the other side of the everyone getting married stage of life. I guess I was going to have to get used to that question. We've not really talked about it.
Bridge? Tom had closed his laptop. Can we get back to our wedding? You know, the one that's meant to be happening in 5 days?
She de-hugged.
Right, sorry. I suppose if we can get everybody there, and if it's somewhere nice, and...
Her phone buzzed.
Oh, God. The dress is still being adjusted. I was meant to pick it up today, and now I can't. What's wrong with me? Why can't they make a dress fit my weird alien proportions?
You don't have weird proportions, said Tom, with a timing that I suspected came from practice. But I would love you and find you sexy even if you did.
Then why won't my dress be ready till tomorrow?
Tom did not look like he had any idea what might make adjusting a dress take longer than average.
It's probably just technical issues at their end.
Technical issues?
Bridge's voice rose.
It's a dress, not a Dyson Airblade.
There was a soft flump as Liz manoeuvred her planner into her bag.
How about we take a walk? Maybe grab a cocktail? It's 2 PM,
Bridge pointed out.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Bridge's lip wobbled.
Right now, everything feels like a bad thing.
Being Bridget's maid of honour had taught me a lot about how weddings worked, and not necessarily in a good way. Because, sure, it was a joyous celebration of your relationship, but it was also a logistical nightmare that you had to be the James Royce Royces to enjoy. And to be fair, their wedding had kicked quite a lot of arse. I agree with Liz, I said. Why don't you give us a rundown of what you want in your dream venue, and Tom and I will try to swing it for you, while you go and have a relax?
Maybe 2 relaxes,
Liz added.
If we hit happy hour.
For a moment, Bridge looked mutinous, and then her shoulders slumped.
Thank you, everyone. I suppose I want somewhere, I don't know, beautiful. The nice thing about doing just the ceremony is that you can go outdoors if you want to.
Liz was also doing calming voice, and way better than me, partly because it was her literal job, and partly because I'd always been quite bad at it. That seemed to genuinely cheer Bridge up, and fuck knows she needed it right then.
What do you think, Tom? We could have the wedding in some kind of park, or a garden.
Or a field, I suggested.
Not a field.
Bridge was pretty adamant about this. I think a garden would be lovely, said Tom, if we can get one.
2 hours later, it turned out we couldn't. Unlicensed venues were as booked up as licensed ones, and unregulated celebrants were as busy as ministers and registry offices. While Liz and Bridge were sitting in a relax bar, downing relaxes, Tom and I had tried every park, hotel, and stately home that Google would throw at us. It's no good, I concluded at last. I am a shitty maid of honour.
And I, added Tom, am a shitty fiancé.
There's just no way we're getting a venue at such short notice. We'd have to be royalty. Tom laughed. He'd always had an irritatingly sexy laugh, which I think I could comfortably admit now he was getting married and I was in a stable relationship.
Yeah, that or massive celebrities.
Well, fuck. How massive? I asked, with a sinking feeling.
I was mostly joking, said Tom.
Okay, I get that, but how massive? I didn't think Tom was quite on board yet, but he went along with it anyway.
I don't know. Love Island runner-up level?
Or 80s rock star who's just released a multi-platinum album and has a hit reality TV show level? Tom gave me a suspicious look.
You don't have to do that.
I know, but... I mean, what's the point of your dad being a dickhead superstar if you can't use it to help your mates?
What's the point of having mates if they're just going to use you for your dickhead superstar dad?
That was also fair. But when it came to my friends,
My balance of sacrifices made versus bullshit dumped was tilted heavily towards bullshit. I can't make any promises, I said, because, well, he is still a dickhead. But I'm hoping that he'll like the opportunity to flex.
It's worth a try, Tom agreed. And no pressure.
No pressure was, as always, one of the most pressurizing things a person could possibly say, but it sounded like Tom meant it sincerely. Yeah, I might take it outside, if that's okay with you. Tom gave me a nod, and I sloped downstairs with my phone. I wasn't completely sure who I was going to call. The last time I'd reached out to my dad's manager, he'd fobbed me off with a "pull the other one, Charlie," and Dad had only got in touch with me because, at the time, he'd thought he was dying of cancer. Since he now definitely wasn't, I didn't think going through official channels was likely to work. Huddled on the steps outside the converted townhouse that was now Bridges' block of flats, I texted Oliver. You know, that wonderful boyfriend who I hadn't seen for days. No luck finding a venue. I'm going to try and call my dad. For a while, there was nothing. Then,
is this a support me text or a talk me out of it text?
How the hell should I know? Support me, I think. Another texty silence.
It's a very kind gesture.
That was Oliver code for, I will be there for you even though you and I both know this will end poorly. It's a bad idea, isn't it? There was another ominous silence.
Not necessarily.
A pause.
You need something. He can help you.
Another pause.
As long as you don't go in with any expectations.
Oh, trust me, I'm going in with zero expectations. For a while I carried on sitting, trying to psych myself up to start making calls.
Take as long as you need, Oliver texted. I'm making sticky miso peppers this evening, and they're quick, so they can be ready whenever you're home.
Another pause.
Assuming you do come home.
Pause.
Though I understand if you can't.
God, I hoped I could. This had been a lot, and I'd expected it to be a lot, but I hadn't quite been prepared for how much of a lot it was. And while I was slowly letting myself accept that my best friend's wedding wasn't going to kill my relationship, I'd have accepted it much more easily if I actually got to spend time with Oliver. Which, if I swung a venue for Bridge, maybe I'd be able to. I took a deep breath and rang Mum. She picked up as speedily as ever.
Allô, mon canton.
Hi, Mum. I sometimes worried that I wasn't staying in touch as well as I used to, but on balance, it was more that Mum was no longer my go-to panic dial, and given I was nearly 30, that was probably healthy. How are you?
Oh, look, some very bad things have happened.
Part of me was instantly worried. Part of me suspected she was talking about something very minor. What's wrong?
Judy and I, we were thinking we may have to break up with the drag race. There is just too much of it these days. It is like when you buy something on the internet, and then the internet, it thinks to itself, well, she bought this thing, she must like this thing, so I will show her adverts for this exact same thing that she just bought from now until the day she dies.
I'm sorry you and drag race are going through a tough time at the moment. She gave a deep sigh.
It is very sad for us. There is the Drag Race UK, there is the Canada's Drag Race, the Drag Race Down Under, the Untucked, the All Stars, and there are queens on the new series of All Stars who are on the last series of the main show. That does not make them an All Star. That makes them someone who lost on a reality TV show quite recently. Also,
she paused ominously,
your boyfriend is incorrect, and Bimini was robbed.
I'd taken it as a good sign on a number of levels that Oliver was willing to argue quite fiercely with my mum about Drag Race. Not only did it show he cared about me enough to regularly watch reality TV with my family, but it also showed he was comfortable enough with them to be himself, instead of the perfect house guest he'd been raised to be. He'd even stopped eating the special curry. Lucky git. Mum, I'm not going to get into a proxy debate about whether Lawrence Chaney's consistently strong performance should have counted for as much as Bimini's growing confidence.
Well, of course it shouldn't, retorted Mum. She had no arc. The whole point of the show is to have an arc so people can say, oh, I thought this person was rubbish, but now they are great.
You say that, but that's why mediocre dancers keep winning Strictly.
They are entertainment shows, Luke. I am going to vote for Who Entertains Me. If all you wanted to see were people being good at dancing, they would take away the celebrities completely.
She did kind of have a point. Not that I could address it, because I'd rung up for a reason. I said, look, there's no good way to raise this. But do you have a private number for Dad? The silence at the other end of the line suddenly radiated concern.
Luke, I thought you had decided that your father was a miserable, bald, old piece of shit with a tiny penis you never wanted to speak to again.
She had a point there too. He is a miserable, bald, old piece of shit whose penis I'm not comfortable talking about, but I think I might... I swallowed a gagging noise. Need him.
What could you possibly need him for?
There was an edge of hurt in Mum's voice, and I couldn't blame her. She'd given me everything my whole life, and all Dad had ever done was mess me about and screw me over. Bridge's wedding venue has fallen through, and I'm hoping Dad can pull some magic celebrity bullshit for her. I tried to keep it light, but Mum still didn't seem happy.
You know, I am a celebrity too, Luke.
Technically, that was true. And if Bridge had wanted to get married in an indie recording studio, the name Odile O'Donnell would probably have opened every door in the building. I do know, but right now Dad's got that big I'm on TV, give me free stuff energy, and I really need free stuff.
I understand,
she said, in a way that implied that understanding didn't stop her resenting.
And Bridget has put up with you for a very long time, so she deserves to get something back.
I nodded, which was unhelpful in a voice-only medium. Yeah, I wouldn't have asked otherwise. It's just, you know, maids of honour got a maid of honour.
I understand,
she said again, and this time she sounded more like she meant it. She gave me the number that Dad reserved only for people whose calls he would actually take, and after rehashing the great Lawrence Bimini debate one last time, I rang off. Then, hands shaking slightly, I called my dad. At first, I was relieved when he didn't pick up, but then I felt bad for being relieved, because I was doing this to fix Bridge's wedding, and I loved Bridge, and wanted her to be happy. So I tried again. And again, and again. Eventually, Bridge and Liz came home, several relaxes to the wind.
Have you and Tom had a fight?
Bridge asked with mock gravity. I looked up with what I hoped was a not traumatized expression. No, I just didn't want him to see me before the wedding.
Seriously, though, what are you doing on my doorstep?
Calling my dad. I thought he might be able to strong-arm a venue into taking us. Bridge looked at me with the biggest big eyes I'd ever seen.
Oh, Luke, you don't have to.
I know, but I want to. Think of it as an early wedding present. She stooped and hugged me.
It's the best present.
Then, after a moment, she added,
but just to be clear, I do want a real present too.
Of course. Bridge opened the door, and she and Liz squeezed past me into the house, and I gave my dad one more go, which was kind of the story of my life. Once again it rang, and once again there was no...
Hello?
There was no mistaking that voice, as if top-shelf whiskey could speak.
if you liked whiskey, and if whiskey was a prick. Part of me, the part of me that had thought this was a bad idea from the start, wanted to hang up straight away. But I'd come this far, so bottling it at the last second would have been the worst of all possible worlds. "Dad, it's Luke." I felt small, and was worried I sounded smaller. "I was wondering if you could help me out." He gave me that low, narcissistic chuckle that I'd once mistaken for affection.
"So, you need the old man for something, do you? What can I help you with?"
I was wondering if you had any contacts who could get us a nice place for a wedding at literally no notice. We were thinking maybe a park or a house with a garden. If you can't, that's fine."
No. That seems like it should be pretty straightforward. After all, what's the point of being famous if you can't help out your own family?"
This was worryingly easy. Suspiciously easy. "And we need to know as soon as possible, because it's this weekend and we need to work out how to get everybody to the new venue."
"I said I have it covered, Luke."
Technically, he hadn't said anything of the sort.
"Trust me."
And for a moment, against all the odds and against all evidence, I did. "Thanks."
"Leave it to me," he said. "You've got nothing to worry about."
And then he was gone. Honestly, the whole thing started to feel unreal 3 seconds after he'd hung up. Partly it was just the image my dad worked so hard to project. That larger-than-life sense of magic and wonder, like he was a grizzled angel from rock heaven who you'd be lucky to have touch your life for an instant before he moved on. And it was partly that I knew from experience that relying on John Fleming to do anything for anybody not named John Fleming was a complete sucker's game. I buzzed the buzzer, and Bridge let me up to the flat, where I gave her the good news.
"You don't seem very excited," observed Liz.
"I know." I sat down on the sofa. It's...
"He has a complicated relationship with his father," explained Bridget, "which is why it was so sweet to reach out to him for us."
"It'll probably not come to anything," I told them. "He's not exactly reliable." But that didn't stop me hoping. And hoping didn't stop me being surprised when, 3 hours later, my phone rang. Except it wasn't my dad. It was my mum.
"I just wanted to find out how it went with your father," she said.
"About how you'd expect." I tucked the phone against my shoulder and mouthed, "It's my mother," to the room, before putting it back to my ear.
"The thing is, mon canton, after you called, I spoke to Judy, and she said that if your father couldn't help you, or if you, if you wanted to tell him to go and fuck himself, then you could have the wedding in her garden."
I shouldered her again. "We do have a backup, Bridge," I relayed. "Apparently you can have the wedding in Mum's friend's garden."
"I heard that,"
said Mum from shoulder height.
"And I will have you know it is a very nice garden."
"Apparently it's a very nice garden," I clarified.
"Look, I think you are being very dismissive of Judy's lovely garden."
I scooped the phone back to my ear. "Sorry, Mum. It's been a long day, and a long few days, and while I'm sure Judy's garden is lovely, I really want this to be special for Bridge."
"Just have a look on the internet and see if you would like it."
It was the least I could do. "Tom," I said, "can you grab the laptop and Google something for me?" Tom obligingly opened up a browser. "Is she on Facebook or something?" I asked. It seemed improbable. But then again, everybody was on some kind of social media these days.
"No, they have a proper website. Well, English Heritage does."
I made an "I'm not sure I heard that correctly" noise. "English Heritage?"
"Faffel Court is a very old building. According to Judy, the Edge Maze goes back to the Restoration."
I passed the words "Faffel Court," no, "Faffel with a P," and "English Heritage" to Tom. "Hang on, So when you said in her garden, did you mean in the grounds of her palatial estate?
I did say it was a very nice garden.
Bridget was staring over Tom's shoulder with a look of mounting joy.
Oh, Luke, she said, it's perfect.
Was that Bridget?
Asked my mum, who was never one to stay out of other people's conversations.
Does she like the garden?
Yes, I told her. Yes, she likes the garden very much. But why didn't you tell me about this earlier?
You never asked. And you seemed so set on talking to your father, I thought maybe it was important to you.
Mum, he's never going to be important to me. He's a cockweasel.
With a small penis, she added. Actually, he doesn't, but I can pretend. So, shall I tell Judy you want her help?
I glanced at Bridge and Tom for confirmation, and they both confirmed enthusiastically. God, yes, please. Thank you so much. You are the actual best.
I know. And you should try to remember that instead of running off to your cockweasel father when you need a favour. In any case, Judy will be very pleased. She said she hasn't officiated at a wedding since 1987.
Wait one tiny minute. Officiated?
Of course. It's her garden. She should be involved.
I was about to protest, but this was getting far too complicated, and there was still the massive logistical task of shifting a large, meticulously planned wedding with over 100 guests from West London to somewhere in Surrey. You know what? I said. I'm sure that'll be fine. After all that, I didn't get to try Oliver's sticky miso peppers. But then, neither did Oliver, because he came to Bridges, where he helped us re-invite the entire guest list and arrange transportation and accommodation for everybody who'd already arranged transport and accommodation for somewhere else entirely. By the time we'd got everything sorted, or as sorted as it could possibly be given the circumstances, we were exhausted. The good kind of exhausted you got from doing something hard but rewarding. And I barely even noticed that my dad had never called me back. Chapter 8. As it turned out, I didn't only miss sticky miso peppers. I also missed asparagus and lemon spaghetti with peas, stuffed butternut squash with maple syrup and frika, and spicy aubergine with Szechuan sauce. And Oliver didn't make a big deal out of it. What with being a lawyer, he wasn't exactly a stranger to things coming up at the last minute, but I felt bad anyway. Yes, we were in a good place, a good enough place that adapting to each other's lives was just a part of being together that we both accepted and were cool with. Except I was beginning to worry I wasn't so much adapting as bailing. It had been nearly a week of staggering home after another evening of intense wedding planning to find Oliver already in bed. And not in bed in a sexy, I've been waiting for you, tiger, way. More in an I've put on my pyjamas and read my book way. And it was temporary. I knew it was temporary. And Oliver, I'm sure, knew it was temporary too. Or at least, I hoped he did. Because if he didn't, then he was being worryingly calm about being in a relationship where we were never conscious in the same room. It didn't help that since the wedding was in Surrey now, Bridge and all her bridesmaids were going to be spending the night before in Judy's enormous stately home for a kind of non-gendered person's night, which I assumed would involve braiding each other's hair, drinking champagne, and talking about boys. Which, honestly, I'd normally have been up for. Only my personal boy would be at home without me, where he'd been every night that week. Still, best friend code, maid of honour code, and unless something went catastrophically wrong, I would never have to do this again. My plan for the evening involved calling a cab to take me to my flat where I'd stashed my suit, then to Oliver's house where I'd somehow managed to stash nearly everything else I owned, and finally back to Bridges, so we could bundle into a hastily rented limousine and get the party started. And maybe, somewhere in the middle of all this, close my eyes for like 10 seconds, so I wouldn't show up in all the wedding photos looking like Bridget's stoner cousin. I was just waiting for the cab, and definitely had not closed my eyes for any length of time, when Bridge sidled over to me, with an apologetic look on her face. "Oh, God," I said. "What's happened now?" She winced.
"Nothing, but..."
She broke off for a moment.
"You know I love you, Luke."
"You bloody well better after this week."
"And I do. But I was wondering, would you be hurt if I said I wanted this evening to just be the girls?"
I wasn't hurt exactly, but I was a bit confused. "Well, no. Except that doesn't sound like anything you'd ever say in real life. I've been one of the girls for a clear decade."
"Damn it."
She curled her hands into fists.
"You caught me. I was talking to Liz and she pointed out that you're knackered and I should give you the night off. But I also knew if I said that, you'd get all defensive and pretend you weren't."
"I'm not getting..." I began, then stopped. "Okay. Yeah. Maybe a bit." Bridge gazed at me earnestly.
"It won't make you a bad friend or a bad maid of honour. In fact, a good maid of honour should be well rested so he doesn't ruin the most important day of my life."
Oh, I wanted to go home so badly. "Really?" I asked, trying to sound like I wasn't begging.
"Really?"
She gave a decisive nod. "You know I love you too, right?"
"You rang your dad for me. If I hadn't worked it out before, I'd have worked it out then."
I was too overweddinged to put up even a token show of resistance. "Bridge, thank you so much." She prodded me lightly in the shoulder.
"Go home, and I'll see you tomorrow, which is, in case you've forgotten, the most important day of my life."
So I went home. Or rather, I went to Oliver's, which was what home meant these days. Although I didn't like to dwell on that, because I was scared that if I looked too closely, it would disappear. In any case, I was going to be crap company this evening, because I was exhausted, seeing seating plans every time I blinked, and still slightly raw from having spoken to my dad, who, surprise, surprise, hadn't called me back, despite the fact the wedding was tomorrow. I suppose I was at least consistent when it came to boyfriending, much like I'd been consistent at sports in school, which is to say, terrible in every respect. I got to Clerkenwell about 7, hopped out the cab, and let myself in with the actual key I actually had. I hadn't been in a key-exchanging relationship since Miles, and that hadn't counted because we'd rented the flat together, so he hadn't so much given me a key as received a key at the same time I had. Anyway, I'd texted ahead, so I'd expected Oliver to be expecting me. What I hadn't expected was for him to be standing in the hall in full black tie, holding a blue velvet jewellery box. Oh, shit. I'd forgotten something important. It definitely wasn't our anniversary, because while we hadn't worked out when it officially was on account of the whole pretending to date before officially dating thing, we'd agreed it was before the Beetle Drive, which had already happened. And it wasn't Oliver's birthday, because while I had forgotten when that was exactly, I knew it wasn't in May. "What's going on?" I asked, in the wary voice of a man who felt he should have known, but didn't. Oliver had gone a little pink. "Well, I felt bad that I wasn't more supportive when Bridget needed your help. And I thought, since we missed Pretty Woman the musical, I could, instead, bring Pretty Woman to you." My gaze flicked from the jewellery box to black tie Oliver and back again. "You'd better not be taking me to the opera. You know I hate opera." "I'm not taking you to the opera," Oliver said. "I couldn't get tickets, and my private jet is being detailed." Thank God for that. I'd do many things for Oliver, but I drew the line at watching people sing their feelings in languages I didn't understand. Relaxing slightly, I gave him a quizzical look. "Do I need to be in a red dress?"
"You can if you want to be, but I'm not sure it's quite your style. Although..."
He offered the jewellery box.
"There is something missing."
"I'm not sure anything else is going to fit in these... I peered down at myself. Jeans?
You do wear very tight jeans, agreed Oliver.
He flipped open the box to reveal a necklace of love hearts, the weird chalky sweets with little messages on them, threaded on elastic.
You mustn't get too excited, he went on, because they're on loan.
I gaped at him. From whom?
Well, I can't say, don't get too excited, I bought these for £1.30 from a sweet shop.
You could say, don't get too excited, these are disgusting, which would be true. My rule is never buy a sweet that's more famous for how it looks than how it tastes. Oliver's brows dipped scowlishly.
Just take the fucking necklace, Lucien.
I reached out, then hesitated. You're going to snap the box on my fingers, aren't you? There was the slightest of pauses. Then Oliver smiled.
For verisimilitude.
So I reached out, and he snapped, and I tried to look as adorable as Julia Roberts, but I think I mostly looked like someone who'd had a jewellery box closed on his fingers.
Oh, come on, said Oliver. That did not hurt. I was very careful.
It's not the pain, it's the shock.
You knew it was coming. You literally told me you knew it was coming.
I glared in a not really sort of way. Then you try it. We swapped roles, and I tried to offer him the necklace like I was a multi-millionaire with daddy issues, instead of a completely normal bloke with daddy issues. He reached, and I snapped.
Ow,
protested Oliver, shaking his hand. Sorry, that happened much faster than I thought it would.
You have to control it on the way down.
Oliver massaged the red line that was forming across his fingertips.
Or gravity takes over.
I'm sorry, I said again. You clearly have more jewellery box snapping practice than I do. Why do you have jewellery box snapping practice? He gave a little cough.
I might have rehearsed in the mirror a couple of times. I didn't want to hurt you.
Oh, no. I took his hand and gently kissed it better. I'm the worst.
I should have known better than to trust you with a dangerous jewellery box.
Not going to lie. I kissed him again. That was a bad call. We both should have known better. The kissing drifted from hands to mouths and ended with Oliver pressed against the wall and me pressed against Oliver as seconds, minutes slipped past in a haze of heat and homecoming and the pleasure of being together again. Eventually Oliver, looking nicely dishevelled in an otherwise pristine tux, drew back.
Under normal circumstances, I'd be delighted to take this to its logical conclusion.
By logical conclusion, I asked, do you mean sex in the hall?
Maybe. But unfortunately, I left some candles burning upstairs, and it's probably best not to leave them unattended for too long.
I stared at him. You did candles as well.
It's been a very long week without you.
This was not making sex in the hallway any less appealing. On the other hand, Oliver had gone to a lot of trouble, and burning his house down would have been a crappy way to thank him. I gestured at the jewellery box. I think you're maybe supposed to put it on me? In the movie, Richard Gere had stood behind Julia Roberts, gazing passionately into a mirror as he fastened the delicate chain around her equally delicate neck. Oliver had to kind of stretch a piece of elastic over my face, nearly dragging one of my ears off. I feel very sexy and desirable right now, I said. Oliver squinted anxiously at me.
Can you breathe? I think it was designed for children.
Yeah, I clawed at my throat. It's digging, but it's not choking.
Oh, good. Because unnegotiated choking was not what I had planned for this evening.
I'd be relieved to hear that, I told him, but now I want to know when we're going to do the negotiated choking.
Perhaps after the movie?
Wait, you got the movie as well? He took my hand and started drawing me upstairs.
Yes, and I moved the television upstairs. In my head, It was all very romantic.
It is very romantic, I admitted. It's probably one of the most romantic things anyone has ever done for me. But you know, like, feelings make me self-conscious, and being self-conscious makes me defensive, and when I'm defensive, I'm sarcastic.
And I love you anyway, Lucien.
Yeah, yeah, I muttered. I love you too. Despite my best efforts with my socks and sex toys, Oliver kept the bedroom immaculate, and it was still immaculate. Only now it was immaculate with the downstairs TV balanced on the chest of drawers, candles arranged artfully on every spare surface, and, with typically Oliverian attention to detail, new bed linen in shades of red and gold. And the worst thing was, I couldn't even find anything glib to say.
The thing, Oliver began, about Pretty Woman, is that when people first watch it, they either love it or hate it. If they love it, they will always...
Oh, shut up, Oliver. I pushed him down on the bed and straddled him. For a moment, I could only look at this ridiculous, kind and beautiful man who made ridiculous, kind and beautiful gestures and was ridiculously, beautifully mine. And he was looking right back at me, his eyes grey velvet in the soft light, the severe lines of his face that couldn't, in moments like these, quite hide how vulnerable he got when he knew he'd been, frankly, extra and was expecting to be rejected or laughed at for it. Leaning down, I kissed him again, the way you only kiss someone when they filled the room with candles for you. We were definitely, definitely going to watch Pretty Woman. But maybe not for a while. Chapter 9.
As a legal professional, said Oliver, as we set off for Surrey at unspeakable o'clock in the morning in the car Oliver had hired for the occasion, I feel I should point out that Edward actually has a fiduciary responsibility to his company and his investors, which means dropping a $1 billion deal in favour of a shipbuilding contract is somewhat unethical. I fished the final piece of homemade French toast from the Tupperware box on my lap.
Very much the point of that movie, Oliver.
I'm aware it's not part of the central romantic fantasy, but it is made explicit earlier that he doesn't work with his own money. So, by deciding at the last minute to make boats with a surrogate father figure, instead of doing what he told people he was going to do, he's technically committing massive fraud.
Isn't... I licked cinnamon from my fingertips. The implication that he'll make more money from the ships long term.
It's a $1 billion deal. The contract with the Navy is only for a few million dollars. That's still over $900 million unaccounted for. No wonder Stuckey is incandescent. Not, I hasten to add, Oliver hastily added, that this justifies his sexually assaulting anyone.
Are you going to be like this when we go and see the musical? I asked. He slid me a mischievous look.
Only if there's a song about business ethics.
I'm kind of assuming it'll be songs about shopping, and maybe, I don't know, sex work?
Ah, said Oliver. So you think it'll open with Vivian climbing out of a window in her thigh-high boots, singing...
He sang.
The laws that are supposed to protect me make things worse in practice, and well-intended regulations can have negative con...
He tapped the steering wheel.
Sequences. If my profession was decriminalized, it wouldn't be unfairly stigmatized, and I wouldn't have to worry about the sexual offences.
He paused and finished in his normal voice.
Act 2003.
I was sitting in a car with a man who would, and thinking about it, could, improv a mediocre show tune about the complexities of the UK sex industry. And for some reason, I was okay with it. You, I told him, are a dork who cares too much.
And it has taken you 2 years to work this out.
I worked out the cares too much thing pretty quickly. The dork has been creeping up on me. Oliver was blushing very slightly.
Yes, I try to keep it close to my chest.
Oliver, the only dork you need to keep close to your chest is me.
You do realise that according to some etymologists, dork means penis.
You can keep that close to your chest too, if you like.
I think that's poor road safety.
Fine, I said, in a fake huff. I'll go to sleep then.
Oliver's hand briefly left the gear stick to pat my knee. You should. It's going to be a long day for you.
And how? I was sure it was going to be a worth it long day, but I was probably going to be in post someone else's wedding recovery for at least a month. Or to put it another way, I was going to be in post someone else's wedding recovery until the next time I needed to go to someone else's wedding. But how will I entertain and delight you if I'm unconscious?
I'll put a podcast on.
I groaned massively. Not the Magnus Archives.
What's wrong with the Magnus Archives?
I'm trying to sleep. It'll give me nightmares. About worms. I paused. Or spiders. Or strangers. Or the sea. Or the sky. Or meat. Or Edinburgh.
It's Magnus, said Oliver firmly. Or This American Life.
I groaned massively again. Fine. Put on Magnus.
So Oliver put on Magnus, and we either trundled or whooshed, depending on traffic, our way to Surrey. And, fortunately, I was knackered enough that whatever horrendous things were happening to the employees of the Magnus Institute, this time I slept right through it. When next I stirred, we'd arrived. Or rather, we'd arrived in the car park, which, given how English stately homes worked, meant that we were still a moderately long walk from the actual house. In a display of unexpected couple efficiency, given that 50% of the couple was me, we retrieved what was left of our wedding costumes from the back seat and took turns straightening each other's ties and brushing off each other's lapels. Not that Oliver's lapels needed that much brushing. I just wanted an excuse to cop a feel. Because while Oliver wore a suit to work every day, this was a special occasion suit. And Oliver in a special occasion suit was different from Oliver in a barrister suit, in a way that was only noticeable if you'd spent slightly too long looking at him. He was in pearl grey, which brought out the silvers in his eyes, and he'd gone with one of his "I'm secretly more flamboyant than I let on" ties, with a pattern of subtle pewter swirls and dusty pink roses. As it happened, my tie was pink as well, but that was because midnight blue and rose gold were the wedding colours, and given the choice between blue suit, pink tie, or blue tie, pink suit, I'd put my foot very firmly down on the side of not looking like a lost flamingo. "Is there something wrong with my lapels?" asked Oliver.
I kept stroking. "Oh, yeah, they're a mess. Extremely dusty."
"Thrilled as I am for you to dust me in a car park, are there not maid of honour duties you need to attend to?"
Leaning in, I nuzzled needily into his neck. "I know. I mean, I think it'll mostly be standing around providing moral support while Bridge gets her hair done, or whatever. But your lapels, what if they get dusty again?"
"Then,"
his voice was soft and full of his smile,
"I shall seek you out at once."
"Please do. Spending a whole wedding without you would be awful."
"I promise you faithfully, Lucien, you will only have to spend parts of weddings without me."
Duly reassured, I left Oliver's lapels alone, and we set off down a long gravel drive towards the speck on the horizon that was apparently Judy's house.
"You know,"
Oliver had taken my hand as we walked, a habit we'd honed over a number of slightly embarrassing strolls around the parks of Clerkenwell,
"it's occurring to me that one day you might have to admit that you're just a bit posh."
I made a choking sound. "I am not posh. I've only got one surname, and I come from a broken home."
"So does Prince Harry. And generally, people who make a big deal out of being too common for opera can't also get a baroness to lend them her front room at short notice."
"It's not her front room, it's her..."
"Grounds," finished Oliver.
Okay, that sounded worse. And worse still, Oliver totally had a point. "Oh, this is nice," I told him. "It reminds me of when we were first going out and I didn't like you."
and it was testament to how far we'd come that I could say something like that, and he'd laugh. And Oliver laughing in a special occasion suit was a very good Oliver indeed. Eventually we arrived at the court bit of Faffel Court, and while I didn't know much about history, it was definitely the kind of place that the kind of person who wanted to get married in that kind of place would want to get married in. Which was to say, big and fancy-looking, with lots of windows and a dedicated posing staircase between two ornate pillars.
"Oh my," said Oliver, "what a lovely Tudor manor."
And again, it was testament to how far we'd come that I had only a slight desire to shove him into a ditch. "Stop showing off."
"But I've always felt my passing familiarity with well-known, highly distinctive architectural styles is an essential part of my bad boy image."
It felt bad to be laughing at the notion of Oliver having a bad boy image, because I knew he could be a bad boy when it counted. "Should I ask how you know it's Tudor, or will I regret it?" He shrugged.
"We do a special house-recognising course in barrister school."
"I know you're joking, but even if you weren't, that would not be the weirdest thing about your job."
"My job," began Oliver, with the gravity of a legal professional, "is..."
Before he could insist that his job wasn't weird, and I could point out that any career that involved wearing a wig but never lip-syncing was weird by definition, Melanie came flying towards us with impressive speed for a woman in a rose-gold frock and matching stilettos.
"Luke!" she cried. "Great to see you. Can you tell Bridge I'll be back in 2 minutes? There's an emergency at work. Don't really have time to talk about it."
She took a deep breath.
"But one of our authors is starting a book tour of the States on Monday, and we've accidentally booked him appearances in New York, Los Angeles and Las Vegas."
This seemed a fairly minor crisis by the standards of Bridge and Melanie's jobs. "Aren't they quite good places for a book tour?"
"Not when they're New York, Texas, Los Angeles, Texas, and Las Vegas, New Mexico. This is why we don't normally have the UK office book the US tour dates."
Oliver was doing his interested in everyone face.
"I take it none of those are big book towns?"
"New York, Texas," replied Melanie, sweeping a stray braid out of her face, "has a population of 20, and Los Angeles, Texas is less than a mile across. But there's quite a nice library in Las Vegas, New Mexico, so he might like that. Anyway, I have to go and sort this out. Bridge is in a small guest room in the lodge. That way."
And with that, she dashed off to disappoint a dozen Texans.
"You should probably commence maid of honouring."
Oliver gently decoupled our hands.
"I'll see if I can be useful somewhere else. Call me if you need me. Or even if you don't."
I certainly wasn't sappy enough to stand and watch as Oliver made his way up to the house, and I certainly wasn't shallow enough to linger on the effect some steps and a well-cut suit had on his arse. So, having done neither of those things, I went looking for the lodge and for Bridget. I found them both in roughly the direction that Melanie had indicated. The guest room looked kind of like the pyjama party scene from Greece, although I was sure nobody had been sing-dissing any of the other bridesmaids. There were clothes literally everywhere, and every spare surface was covered in either cosmetics or mimosas. Bridge, mimosa within reach, was sitting at a dressing table with a huge mirror, having arcane things done to her hair by someone I hoped was a professional.
"Luke!"
Her reflection beamed at me.
"Have a mimosa."
On the one hand, I really wanted a mimosa. On the other hand, it was 9 a.m, and I was barely conscious as it stood. "Maybe in about 6 hours?
"In 6 hours, I'll be married and we'll be starting on the champagne."
A look of wonderful yet terrifying realisation crept across her face.
"Oh my God, I'll be married in 6 hours. I'll be Ms. Bridget Wells."
We all stared at her.
"Bridge,"
said Jennifer, emerging from what I assumed was the ensuite.
"That's already your name." "Yes, but I'll be Ms. Bridget Wells, who's married."
Liz pressed a mimosa into my hand anyway.
I think you're going to need this, she whispered.
I looked round for somewhere to sit, and found nowhere that wasn't a lap, and that was one step too gay best friend even for me. Eventually, I propped my coccyx against the corner of a chest of drawers, which was very much a side grade from just standing.
So?
Began Liz, in a tone that seemed far too implication-laden for a woman of the cloth.
How was your evening? Was it lovely?
For a moment, I wasn't sure what she meant. Then I glared at Mirror Bridge. Oh, so you were in on it then? She gave me a look of winsome triumph.
Oliver said he'd missed you, and you'd been so nice to me, I thought you deserved a night off.
It was great, I said, offering the PG, appropriate for relative strangers version of events. We watched old movies and got a relatively good night's sleep.
That does sound great, agreed Jennifer. Perhaps it's because I'm in my 30s now, but a good night's sleep is one of my top 5 bedroom fantasies.
Bernadette looked around from where she was adjusting the line of her deep blue bridesmaid's dress.
What are the other 4? New bookshelves, a husband who knows how to share a duvet, one of those pillows that are good for your back, and Dwayne the Rock Johnson covered in lemon sorbet.
Lemon sorbet?
Asked the hairdresser, who until that moment had been screening the bridal banter with consummate professionalism.
I like lemon sorbet.
Liz squinted like someone trying to solve a difficult maths puzzle.
Wouldn't it sting?
I don't want him totally covered in lemon sorbet, protested Jennifer.
Oh, right.
Bridge's mirror face was also trying to solve a difficult maths puzzle.
Because that would be strange.
Also, I added, wouldn't it ruin your nice new pillow? Finding the room as seat-deprived as I had, Jennifer slumped against the wall.
Given that I'm married, he's married, we live in different countries, and he's the most electrifying man in all of entertainment, I don't think sorbet logistics are the largest barrier to my having a night of steamy passion with the bloke from Jumanji. Actually,
Bernadette poured herself another mimosa.
If you are going to use a dessert in a sexual context, sorbet is a really good choice. It's mostly water and sugar, so it doesn't stain, and it doesn't curdle, and it's not as sticky as you might imagine.
Jennifer made a vindicated gesture.
See, I apparently have incredible sexual instincts. The rest of you would be covering Dwayne the Rock Johnson in completely the wrong kind of condiments.
Asking for a friend?
Asked Liz. For a friend.
Bernadette, what other foods is it either good or bad to lick off somebody?
Bridge's mouth dropped open.
Are you allowed to lick things off people?
Not at the moment, no,
Liz admitted.
But within the confines of marriage, the church has no policy for or against licking things off people.
I can't tell.
That was the moment when Melanie rejoined us.
If I have the best or the worst timing, who is licking what off whom?
Jennifer, said Liz. Lemon sorbet. The Rock.
The look of confusion on Melanie's face was, in context, understandable.
Johnson or Gibraltar?
I'm not even going to ask.
Jennifer slid slowly down the wall.
Why you think I might want to lick the Rock of Gibraltar?
Melanie shrugged.
I dunno. White people shit.
If I had to lick a geographical feature,
said Bridge, with the air of somebody who had drunk way too many mimosas and was giving this way too much thought,
I'd pick Arthur's Seat.
The ensuing discussion of which parts of the country we'd put which parts of our body on lasted long enough for the hairdresser to be replaced by a makeup artist, and I found myself wondering what the hell this ritual would look like if I was, say, marrying Oliver. Would I sit around in a new suit, drinking cocktails with Priya, Bridge and the James Royce Royces, while a highly trained professional ran a comb through my hair exactly once? Of course, maybe that said more about my hair than the institution of marriage. Though I had to admit that when the experts had done their work, Bridge did look fucking fantastic. Not that she ever looked unfucking fantastic, but she looked fucking fantastic-er? Just all happy and glowy, and with her flower-woven hair framing her face in ways I could appreciate, but not understand. Oh my God! Bridge stood up, wobbling slightly with nerves.
Oh my God! I'm getting married in less than 6 hours.
I checked my phone. In 2 hours. So unless you want to walk down the aisle in a fluffy bathrobe, you should probably think about getting the dress on. She gave a little squeak.
Oh my God, the dress. Jennifer, can you grab it for me? Sure.
Jennifer climbed gingerly back to her feet.
Where is it?
There was a silence where you would very much hope there would not be a silence. Bridge turned slowly round.
Bernadette, where's the dress? I thought,
said Bernadette.
Jennifer was taking care of it.
Bridge kept turning.
Melanie, where's the dress? I agree with Bridge, said Melanie. I thought it was Bernadette's job. Oh, my God.
The tenor of Bridge's oh my gods had changed dramatically.
Liz, tell me you picked up the dress.
Liz put her hands in the air.
Hey, I'm not even a bridesmaid. I'm just a redundant vicar. I'm here for the booze and the sex tips.
I'm sure, I said, not at all sure, that it's here somewhere.
It's a wedding dress,
cried Bridge.
It's enormous. It's not going to be under someone's lipstick.
From a mixture of helpfulness and denial, I started looking inside, behind, and beneath anything you could conceivably have hidden a very large frock inside, behind, or beneath. Bridge sank back into her chair.
I can't believe this is happening. This is my perfect special day. I can't have a perfect special day without my perfect special dress.
I exchanged horrified looks with the rest of the bridesmaids, because it was looking a lot like she was going to have to. And, as maid of honour, it was my job to tell her that.